Welcome, listeners, to the Cozy Corner with Alexia Gordon, the podcast that highlights cozy and traditional mysteries. You won't find stories filled with explicit sex or graphic violence. You will find interviews with authors who create crime fiction filled with intriguing plots, engaging characters, and high-quality writing. Thanks for listening. Welcome, listeners, to another episode of the Cozy Corner with Alexia Gordon. I'm Alexia Gordon, author and host of the podcast. Frances McNamara joins me in the corner today to chat about Death on the Home Front, the latest Emily Cabot mystery. Welcome, Frances.
Hi, nice to be here.
Death on the Home Front is the eighth Emily Cabot mystery. Could you tell us what you're sluice up to this time out?
So, the series started in 1893. Now it's 1917. And she's a fictional character who's from Boston, but she works as a lecturer at the University of Chicago, and she's in Chicago. And it is right in the spring when we join the World War I, when America became involved in World War I. She has three grown children at this point, two boys and a girl. And her daughter's best friend, who is supposed to get married to the brother of the girl the daughter's going to marry, is found dead. And that's how Emily gets pulled into this mystery. And it's right at the end of March, beginning of April, 1917, when we were getting into the war.
Now, what made you decide to write a historical series?
Well, I had written some contemporary ones that weren't published, and I worked with computers, so some of them were about computers, and boy, can that information go out of date really quickly. And I was working at the University of Chicago, and I happened on a memoir of the first dean of students at University of Chicago, and they sounded like interesting people at an interesting time. So I started writing a book about that, and it got a very good response from my my writing group that I was with. So it just turned out to be really interesting to be able to have some real historical characters in there. And Chicago's an interesting place, but I didn't grow up there. I grew up in Boston, so it was fun to investigate the history.
And you're talking about research, you know, Chicago today is definitely different from Chicago of 100 years ago. So what kind of research did you do to bring the Chicago of the past to life for modern readers?
Well, I like place. So it started with the campus of the University of Chicago, which was, you know, built right around the time I started the series. And then the second one was at Hull House, which is actually on the campus of University of at University of Illinois in Chicago, and you could visit it. And then Pullman was a factory town. The third book is about that, and that's a place you can actually visit in Chicago. So places were important. I read memoirs. So the memoir of the first dean of the University of Chicago, then the memoir of Jane Addams and Florence Kelly for the book about Hull House, and then newspaper articles, of course, because those are the ones that really take you right back. And so much has been digitized. It used to be hard to get at newspapers, old newspapers, but now you can get at them online, and you can search right by date and by subject and that kind of thing, and that really pulls you in. So I was working at the Regenstein Library at the University of Chicago, so I had access to a lot of really good research materials. And it's when you get down to the everyday stories of what's happening with people that you find out things, you learn about people you never heard of, you find out people, things were happening that you never expected, like that the mayor of Chicago was known as Kaiser Bill because he was thought to be too sympathetic with the Germans because there were so many German Americans who voted for him in Chicago. So all sorts of interesting things like that.
Now that touches on, you know, a big social and political issue. Obviously, you know, America's entrance or not entrance into the First World War. A lot of your books touch on some significant social and political issues of the time. So how did you decide which ones to include, and how did you decide which side of the debates your characters would fall on?
Right. Well, actually, there were such interesting dilemmas that it was good to be able to make them not too easy to get a solution to. So the first book I wanted to set at the World Columbian Exposition. And The Devil in the White City had already been written. And a lot of that is about the serial killer who they didn't really find till a couple of years later. And I don't care that much about serial killers. But I found out that Ida B. Wells was doing her anti-lynching campaign right on the campus, at the World's Fair. She was out there giving out a pamphlet saying why the colored Americans are not at the Columbian Exposition. So I just found her fascinating and that fascinating. A lot of the books bring up women who were doing things at the time that you didn't know about. So it makes for better conflict. So the Pullman strike in particular, I mean, I didn't realize that federal troops had gone into an American city, and that happened with that. And, you know, there were labor people who were setting off bombs or something like that, but most of them were, you know, trying to make a fair wage. So it's, a lot of them are not easy problems. There were two, but I was always looking for women at the time because they were very interesting. The women who, like Jane Addams and Florence Kelly, began working in social work right at that time, both in the city itself and in the University of Chicago. They didn't want it to be too theoretical. They wanted it to be social work so that things were actually happening, legislation was happening, and you don't realize how much they actually did. There were two women I heard about at the Chinatown Museum in Chicago. The two Chinese women in 1896 had gotten medical degrees at University of Michigan, and then they spent the summer of 1896 in Chicago and then went back and were famous for running clinics in China. But nobody knew what they were doing in 1896 in Chicago. So that gave me, I could put in a fictional murder that they're involved in. And then turn up a lot of information about the Exclusion Act for Asian Americans and the paper sons that were happening at that time. I think they're really interesting problems that get repeated in American history, and Chicago's right in the middle of America, and it was a time when they were reflecting a lot of issues that those issues come up again and again and don't necessarily get resolved. So it made for interesting conflict.
Yes, and conflict is always makes for gripping subjects for all kinds of fiction. Speaking of fiction, you've of course mentioned several people who actually existed, but your protagonist is your creation. So what's the trickiest thing about combining these real historical figures with fictional characters?
Right. So, well, for one thing, give up on people who are real historians because they don't want to read fictionalized versions of it. But a lot of us do, and I like to read about a particular place or a particular time period that I don't know about and get interested in particular characters. So it's important to me every time to find some real characters to be involved because they have such interesting stories that have been hidden that that people really are interested when you bring them to the top. But the story itself has to be about the fictional person, and it has to be a problem for them, and it has to be, she works with a fictional police detective, but she's an amateur detective, so as you know, you have to make it believable that she's involved. So in the most recent book, her daughter is in the middle of this, and it turns out one of her sons is involved with the whole thing that's going on with the people who want to get into the war and want to find German spies and people who are in motor car racing and things like that. But her own fictional family has to be involved to have the reader really interested. So sometimes, I mean, in Hull House, I made Florence Kelly an actual suspect, and she was a real person, so she probably wasn't a suspect in a murder. In two of the books, I actually use real historical killers, and I add some fictional bodies to them. So it is always a balancing act, and it's something you have to be a little careful about when you're writing historicals.
Do you ever hear from historians, either yay or nay?
Yes. Like I say, people who don't like fictional history don't read it. But I was really happy to go down to Pullman, the town of Pullman, and the people there were up on the history and were very interested, and they liked the book, so I felt good about that. And yeah, you do hear from people sometimes, but it tends to be people who like reading historical fiction. And I always put an afterword in so that with pointers to some of the sources that I used, because the people you turn up that people haven't heard about are so interesting, you know, they might want to go back and read more about them, some of the characters. So
now, do you ever hear from Bostonians to say, why Chicago and why not us? Because Boston certainly has plenty of history, you know, dating back to, that's what, 17, whatever, 16, Boston. Whatever. So,
yeah, I lived about 25 years in Chicago. I lived in Columbus, Ohio before that, but I came back to Boston after I retired. And yes, that is a question. So in fact, I have a book that's set in Boston in 1919. And there's a woman named Frances Glessner Lee who made a bunch of little miniature rooms that were crime scenes.
Oh, yeah.
And they were used for years and years to teach detectives, to teach police detectives. And I found out she was actually from Chicago. But in 1919, she was running a house on for returning soldiers on Beacon Hill. And she was working with the real medical examiner of that time, who was a real character, too. So I wrote that book. I set it in Boston. My nephew has an apartment in the North End, in the old buildings of the North End, and he's got a roof deck on it. And I have them, some anarchist meeting there, and somebody gets thrown off that roof deck. And I could use a bunch of other real Boston places. So people do ask that. Also, my father was police commissioner from 1962 to 72, and he had a lot of really interesting stories. But I've never felt competent to take on those stories. But people are always saying to me, "Why don't you? You know, he used to tell these great stories. Why don't you write him up?"
Now, do you know Boston and Chicago are both fascinating cities. So do you see your settings as characters in themselves, or as just backdrops for the rest of your story?
No, very much characters in themselves. I think what I noticed about Chicago, not having grown up there, was that the imprint is very much on the city of those people from like the 1890s, early 1900s. When you look at, like, I had an apartment looking out on Grant Park and Field Museum, and you really, those people had sort of formed that city in a lot of ways. And Boston, I mean, I grew up loving walking around Boston. It's got lots of history. I used to walk around with my father, and he'd say, "Now we walk down the street and you see that architecture there, and that architect did that. And I see this guy got shot here, and that guy got shot there." So he had a different view of the city. You know, there's lots of different views of the city. So they are fascinating.
I imagine the view, you know, a tour by a police commissioner is probably not going to be the same as a tour by the Chamber of Commerce.
Right. What's a little different? Yep. So, yeah, so I do love cities. I think they do have a real personality themselves. And I lived in Columbus, Ohio for about 9 years, and I was so disappointed. I rented a place in German Village, which is just south of the city. And then I would walk into the city in the weekend and nobody would be in there because everybody lives in the suburbs and they stay there on the weekends. And I was so disappointed. So when I moved to Chicago, I was so much happier because it was a real big city with a life and lots of different people and lots of different neighborhoods. Yes. I really am a city girl, I think.
Actually, I'm a fan of cities too, so I understand that. Now,
Well, you live in a nice little city there, right? You're in Newport, right?
I am not. I actually came here from Chicago most recently, and then to Newport, which is a nice little city. I mean, by
Yeah.
Chicago's and Boston standards, it's a town, but it's still a
Right.
very vibrant town with lots of
Personality and
history
a
and
social history.
personality. Yeah.
Yeah.
So yes, and I do live within walking distance of the town center. So
Oh, that's great.
I'm a
That's
city
great. I
person.
actually had Newport in, I wrote one book that was set in Woods Hole because all the scientists at the University of Chicago ran the Woods Hole Marine Biological Laboratory in 1894. And so I set one there, and at one point one of the they go over to Newport and visit some people there. So I actually had some scenes in Newport.
Oh, wow,
So
excellent.
I did use I we actually have a family house on Cape Cod, so I used
Oh,
Woods Hole.
okay.
And I did one set in Paris. Bertha Palmer, who was a big socialite, wealthy socialite, takes Emily and her family to Paris in 1900 for the Paris Exposition. So that was,
Wow.
that again is a wonderful city, you know, so it plays a part in the book.
Now, did you in addition to researching the Paris of 1900, did you what kind of research did you do into like how you physically get from Chicago to Paris in the 1900, which should vastly different than
Yeah.
in
Yeah,
the before
they would
times you could
take
just go get on a
boats.
plane.
But the best history was I had a friend who at that time was studying at Yale for a medieval studies thing, and we went over for 2 weeks and had an apartment in Paris. And she was doing Chartres Cathedral. We went out there several times. But I was doing like 1900 Paris, which you can find things all over. So that was my excuse for that book. The trip.
Research trip. There you go.
Yeah.
Hey, now, as mentioned, Death on the Home Front is the eighth book in your Emily Cabot
Right.
series. So
Right.
how do you keep a series feeling fresh 8 books in, aside from, the setting it in different places and taking side trips to Paris and Newport and
Yeah, it's a challenge. I'm sure you know that because you write a series. I made a decision after the first four books, Woods Hole. My editor said to me when I gave her the Woods Hole book, she said, "You know, this has all happened in 2 years. This girl must be exhausted." And I thought about it, and I thought about it, like somebody like Victoria Thompson, she's got a wonderful Gaslight series, and it's gone on. There must be 15 or 20 books, but it all takes place in about 4 years. There's another historical mystery writer I really like, who's Stephen Saylor, and he writes about Rome. But his character, he has a family and so forth, and he jumps years and he goes to different interesting historical backgrounds for the thing. So I decided I would write one that jumped a number of years, let the people grow up, the people change, and I know how I'm going to end it in 1934. There's a World's Fair in Chicago again, so I'll start with one and end with one. So it's a challenge to do that, for sure. Not to repeat yourself, but I am drawing on history and going down into the newspaper articles and finding out stuff you didn't realize happened. So
So
right now I'm working on one that's set very closely after this book because it's set in 1918, and I planned this a long time, several years ago, but it's during the pandemic. And right when the war is coming to an end, and it also features a really avant-garde club that was in Chicago at the time called the Dill Pickle. So the next one is set there, and then I want to set one when Wall Street crashes, and the last one in that 1934 World's Fair in Chicago. So have a plan.
Does that help to kind of know where you're going to end it? Does that sort of help you plot out, where you kind of need to go in each book to get to that 1934 point?
Yeah, it helps me anyways. I tend to be more of a somebody who does outline type things, and I knew that the idea of my books was going to be they have to have that personal follow that family, like those characters you're doing. But I was interested in giving it a backdrop every time of some big significant American crisis, like the war, the pandemic, the Wall Street something, whatever. So, and 1934, of course, is you know, when you had the terrible depression. But so, there were a lot of women who wound up in Roosevelt's cabinet, some of the women who had worked at Hull House and so forth, who worked on the social programs there.
And so why did you, other than wanting to start and end with the World's Fair, why did you decide not to go on into, like, say, like 39 or 40 in the start of the Second World War?
Well, I figure it can't last forever. I'll have to write those. And I actually on the side was thinking of starting another. I had a couple of other false starts of other series type things. So. I, you know, I just think that one would make it complete. She was born in 1870, so she's going to be in her 60s, and people didn't live forever at those days. So I'd have to do the children. Like, some people do that. Elizabeth Peters did that with her Egyptologist. Her children became really important. And actually, Lindsay Davis did that with her character in Rome, and his daughter takes over his detective thing. But I don't think I'm going to last that long. So,
and I think the Miss Fisher series on TV did that. The Miss Fisher's Modern Mysteries, they kind of bumped it up from the 20s to the 60s, I guess.
Oh, did they? I've watched a few of those, but I haven't watched the whole series. Did they? That's interesting.
Now I don't know if the Modern Miss Fisher, I don't know what the relation is to the original, but
you can kill you want and. So long as you make it interesting for the readers and they believe it.
That's true. And so you've touched a little on it. What do you see Emily going next after the kind of death on the home front in the World War One? You mentioned the pandemic in the next book.
Yeah.
And are you?
Yes. Because nobody, they tell you not to write about pandemics because everybody wants to forget it after this. So, but there's other things in the book besides the pandemic. But I had meant to do that because before this pandemic came on, there were a number of like PBS type shows and so forth. But really, people had blocked it out after that pandemic. So you didn't hear about it that much. So it came because it was so important at the time, but people almost sort of blocked it out of their minds afterwards, it seemed like. You know, the fact that there were bodies everywhere and there weren't enough coffins and all kind of, Philadelphia was particularly bad, I guess. So I had meant to bring that up as a forgotten piece of history, but of course it's no longer forgotten because this pandemic came up.
Although people may be surprised to discover how many similarities there actually were.
Really? They estimated that 675,000 people in the United States died from that.
And considering how much smaller the population was.
50,000. Of course, the population was smaller at that time, right? Yeah.
Yeah, so that's, but that means that was a big chunk of the population, you know, if you.
Yeah.
So it's. Oh, yeah.
But vaccine.
Yes.
I'm happy for the vaccines. Let's get those going.
And where can readers buy a copy of Death on the Home Front?
Death on the Home Front is available at Amazon, but also at bookshop.org. Actually, if you go to the Allium Press or my site or the Allium Press site, they will link you to a number of different sites, so Barnes & Noble and other ones too. The physical book you'll find in some of the Chicago bookstores. Some of the libraries carry the series too, even in Boston. I think the Boston Public Library carries the series. So, you know, you can start there and find it a number of places. And if you can't come to a signing, I can always send you a signed book plate. I got some book plates and I sent those to like Centuries and Sleuths in Chicago in Forest Park. That's usually where I used to have a launch party, and we couldn't do that this year. So I sent them a bunch of signed book plates.
And so folks who are interested in getting a signed book plate, is going through a Centuries and Sleuths bookstore the best way, or is there another way to connect with you about that?
You can contact me via my website. I got a contact form. I'd be happy to provide that.
And what's your website?
FrancesMcNamara.com.
And are you on any other social media, Facebook or Instagram or Twitter or
Yeah, I'm
anything?
on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, but I probably do Facebook more than anything else, and it's just Frances McNamara on Facebook too. And most of my posts are public. And most of the ones I look at are other authors, including yours. I've been getting yours.
Oh, thank you. And actually, by which, and you're published by Allium Press. That's a Chicago-based publisher, right? It should.
Right. Allium Press is a small press that does fiction with a Chicago connection, and its motto is Rescuing Chicago from Capone, one book at a time. So people would know, because you'd go to overseas or anything, and the one thing people would know about Chicago is boom, 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 Al Capone. But there's a lot. It's run by a woman who had a friend of mine who had been a reference librarian at Chicago History Museum and knows a lot of Chicago history and does a lot of research in it. And there's a lot more to Chicago than Al Capone.
Will Al Capone be making any cameos in your book?
No, I don't think my editor would allow me. Since it's rescuing Chicago from Al Capone, I don't know that she'd allow me to. So, well, I'll have to see.
On that note, thank you very much for joining me in the corner today. I'm glad you were here and Al Capone was not.
Well, thank you very much for inviting me. I appreciate it.
And thank you, listeners, for tuning in to another episode of the Cozy Corner with Alexia Gordon. My guest today was Frances McNamara, author of Death on the Home Front. I'm your host, Alexia Gordon. Until next time, goodbye. Thank you, listeners, for tuning in to another episode of The Cozy Corner with Alexia Gordon. If you enjoyed the show, please leave a 5-star rating or review. Help me keep bringing you fun and informative chats with authors of cozy and traditional mysteries by supporting the podcast on Patreon at www.patreon.com/authoralexiagordon. Until next time, goodbye.